Jimmy Muyaha is leading the conversation all across South Africa right now. Stay tuned to SAFM.
Thank you very much to Mr. Host for that news update. There'll be more news with Greg at 7 o'clock right now on This Day in History. We start in 1923. A company called Disney Brothers Cartoon Studio would be founded on this day. It would be later named in 1926, 3 years later, to Walt Disney, as we know it today. 1939, on this day, Charlotte Matleke would pass away, sadly. Interestingly enough, on the exact same day, on the other side of the world, there'd be a sugar rationing introduced in the Netherlands. 1945, on this day, the United Nations Food and Agricultural Organization would come into existence, and it is that organization that allows us to celebrate World Food Day today. On this day in 1952, Albert Luthuli would be elected the ANC president. In 1953, a year later, Fidel Castro would be sentenced to 15 years in Havana, Cuba. In 1962, 9 years after that, the Cuban Missile Crisis would begin. JFK would see would be shown pictures of Soviet missiles in Cuba, and such the Cuban Missile Crisis would kick off. In 1984, on this day, the late Archbishop Emeritus Desmond Tutu would win the Nobel Prize. In 2004, on this day, Lionel Messi would make his debut at Barcelona, his club debut at Barcelona against Espanyol at the age of 17. And as they say, the rest is history. And we wrap things up with 2005 news. On this day in 2005, Fernando Alonso would become the first Spanish Formula One champion, bringing back the Formula One title to Spain for the first time. He'd beat Kimi Raikkonen in that Drivers' Championship race. You're tuned into the SFM Market Update with MoneyWeb. I'm your host for the evening, as always, Jimmy Muyaha. And on the show today, we take a look at the developments from that World Food Day. ShopRite Group has put out a food index that looks to highlight the importance of food security. It suggests that food insecurity is a serious problem in the world and in South Africa. We're going to speak to them around that. We've also got a conversation with Alan Gray around the political speculation that could potentially influence markets and how it could influence those markets. And then we've got a conversation with the South African Reserve Bank. Yesterday, they put out their monetary policy review that they do twice a year. We've got a conversation with the Reserve Bank directly around that policy review, what it means for the policy stance that they hold at the moment and what that would mean for you and I as consumers. We've also got a conversation as part of our Consumer Awareness and Warning Wednesday feature around what the FSCA has been up to. They have put in place a couple of enforcement actions, and we're going to be looking at those enforcement actions in a great detail. They've been very, very busy, and we're going to speak to the divisional head of enforcement around that. And then because it's Wednesday, we wrap things up with a look at an executive lounge feature. We speak to the CEO of a company called Tuesday Consulting about what she does on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As always, we kick off the show with how the markets have been moving throughout the day. It's been a very interesting day of market movements, especially on the resources front. And I'm joined on the line by portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, Nick Kunz, to take a look at the market movements, try and make sense of them, and see what it all means. Good evening, Nick. Lovely to speak to you, as always. Resources surprising us today in a market that doesn't really know where to go.
Evening, Jimmy. Evening to the listeners. Yeah, spot on. I mean, it's been almost treading a little bit of water the last few days. Not quite sure where we are. We kicked off US earnings season almost exactly a week ago. So a lot of that news flow coming through and trying to make sense of it all. The financials on one side, and as you said, a decent day for commodities with a little bit of a weaker dollar. So we managed to squeeze out almost 0.5% gain for the oil share today on this Wednesday.
Nick, when we look at the global picture, obviously there's a couple of things that are still up in the air, and things are going to get even messier as we head closer towards that election. Was there anything that stood out for you in today's movements? I mean, I looked at Asian markets. They were kind of a mixed bag. The FTSE was up 1% in European trade. US markets also not really doing much. It seems as though markets are definitely taking a bit of a wait and see approach to things. And we've got data coming out this week. We've got inflationary data coming out of the EU and all of that. But it doesn't seem as though the markets are too reactive.
No, but I think the big story for us today, was certainly those who watch the markets, was the news out yesterday from ASML. They are the one of the largest players in the chip space. They'd make all the sort of the machines that make the semiconductors. And in fact, at one point, it was Europe's biggest company that's listed in Amsterdam. That stock was down 19%. In fact, I think it was its biggest drop ever. So that sets a bit of a no, sort of a negative tone in the tech sector. And you've got that on the one side, and then the other side, you've got U.S. bank earnings, which have been coming out sort of fast and furious since Friday, and so far they've been pretty good. So you've had for the likes of Morgan Stanley, absolutely one of the biggest U.S. banks after J.P. Morgan, they're up 7.5%. So you've got a real, again, maybe just adding to, as you said, adding to a little bit of the confusion, a little bit of the sort of the tug and the pull on both sides of it, and trying to get sense of it.
Nick, when we look forward to what could potentially come out, I mean, obviously the inflation numbers that we just spoke about are going to come out in drips and drabs. We are in US earnings season. It might be the last one, well, certainly the last one before the presidential election, but it might also be the last kind of real update before the end of the year. How are we seeing kind of just the tail end of the year shape up?
Yeah, so I mean, let's stick with the central bank story, Jimmy. So tomorrow you've got the European Central Bank, the ECB. So they make decisions on direction of interest rates for the euro sort of block. That's out tomorrow. So maybe they will give us a bit of an early tease on what central banks are thinking. And as you said, Mr. Powell meeting with the Fed in November, the same month that the elections are taking place. I can't see they're going to do anything too surprising. And don't forget, maybe they sort of front-loaded their decision by doing that sort of jumbo 50 basis point cut when most were looking for a quarter. So maybe playing into the idea that, you know, there's not much they can do in November. And I must tell you, besides the sort of the headline news, you know, the sort of I don't know, the juicy stories coming out of Mr. Trump and Kamala Harris. I almost feel like the world is sort of sitting back and letting them get on with it, because normally it would be far more news flow moving these things at the moment.
Well, to be fair, we have been through a lot over the last couple of years. I think we are due for a bit of a break.
Battle-hardened, yes.
Nick, let's look at some of the local developments. We saw resource counters doing exceptionally well, but I had a look at that, and platinum finally back above $1,000 again. It's been teetering around that level. PGM's feeling a bit better at the moment. It looks as though the likes of Harmony and the gold counters as well feeling a little more optimistic around where we stand at the moment. Are we still kind of bullish on the mining sector at the moment? Can we finally say that we potentially have seen a bottoming out of the sector? It's been a long time.
It has been a long time, Jimmy. You know, it's difficult to call the tops, difficult to call the bottoms. Normally, you need a little bit of, you need the catalyst, especially at the bottom. You know, they're very much driven by what the spot prices do. And as of recent, as, you know, China has become South Africa's biggest trading partner, you know, so influential with all that stuff that we dig out the ground and send over to China. So certainly a couple of weeks ago with the, you know, the sort of the decent stimulus story coming out, and China's Ministry of Finance, obviously just on the weekend when they held that press conference, coming out with some more, a little bit short on details, I must say, and a lot of promises. But that should add a little bit of sort of, I guess, a little bit of a bounce to that commodity basket. And then, of course, we need the weaker dollar, Jimmy. You know, if we get this dollar to weaken or continue to weaken, maybe a little bit of a not as big a cut tomorrow, or certainly a more hawkish ECB, which will weaken that dollar and strengthen the euro, it might get a few more legs. But we need to close where we are now. You know, as I said, the platinum price you pointed out sitting a couple of bucks, just under 1,000. Palladium is at 1,020, so that's certainly good news, and the gold price continues to run. Put all of those in the pot, and hopefully we get a little bit of a better inflation print, again, leading to that weaker dollar I alluded to, and that should at least get these PGM baskets continue their sort of bounce off the last few weeks.
Nick, before I let you go, I want a better rand. How do we get a better rand?
How do we get a better rand? Well, I mean, that's the hard story. I mean, that's something that they need to create conditions for. We need growth in South Africa. There's been a lot of promises. We've certainly had a lot of decent sentiment. I've seen on our side some foreign flows coming in. That all should lead to a stronger currency. They've been buying our bonds. But now we need the growth. Now we need to actually back it up with some decent numbers. And I think anything less than 2.5% GDP growth, which is a big ask after, as you know, 10 years of going nowhere, then you should see that rand coming through. But I must tell you, I think it's holding out okay. You know, 1760. You know, it's not as bad. We're still, you know, up against the dollar for the year. But it'd be much nicer to see it closer to 16, Jimmy. Then you can go on that overseas trip you wanted.
Can't afford it. Not at 16. We've got to wait for 14 Rand, Nick. Unless you're paying, in which case I'm definitely in. Thanks so much, Nick. Nick Kunz, portfolio manager at Sunlum Private Wealth, where they pay for your holidays. No, they don't. But thanks so much, Nick, for the time and for the insights. Always a lovely conversation with you. And thanks for giving us an update on the market movements throughout the day.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
As the great election year draws to an end, all eyes are on the US presidential race to see who will return to the White House. Naturally, the speculation tends to filter into global markets. Tune into the SAFM Market Update this evening at 6:45 as Alan Gray Portfolio Manager Jiten Pillay discusses the JSE's recent performance and explains how investors often cast their ballots through the markets. Brought to you by Alan Gray, long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
So the markets need catalysts, the market need decisions to be made, and some of those decisions come from a little organization known as the South African Reserve Bank. They're certainly not little, they are the oldest reserve bank on the African continent, which means they're the most experienced on the continent. It also means they've put out their latest review, and we're going to be taking a look at that, the monetary policy review that they give us on a regular basis around how they are seeing monetary policy, what they're thinking, and what it means for you and I. I'm joined on the line by the head of the Economic Research Department, who is also a member of the Monetary Policy Committee at the South African Reserve Bank, Dr. Chris Louvault, to take a look at the Monetary Policy Review and try and make sense of it. Good evening, Dr. Louvault. Lovely to speak to you. Let's start with an overview of the current policy stance. Where is the SARB's mind at, and what is the policy stance at the moment?
Thanks, Jimmy, for having me on, and please do call me Chris. You know, we're in a much better environment nowadays than we were, say, 6 months ago. We've seen a turning in the global economy and expectations of better growth rates as well as much lower inflation rates in much of the world. So global inflation is easing. It's not easing in a kind of linear fashion. Convergence down to lower rates is slower than we'd like it to be, but it's certainly going in the right direction. In some places, is closing in on central bank targets, in particular in advanced economies. That's great because it's helped to buoy the rest of the world, including South Africa. It's allowed our own global inflation, our own inflation rates to continue to moderate quite a lot. So you will have noticed and seen that things like imported goods inflation is much lower now than it was a few months back. Fuel inflation has come down very, very nicely, as well as food inflation, and all of that creates a much better inflation outlook for us. Much of this improvement has come in very recent months, so literally over the last sort of 3-4 months, but it's come down faster than we had expected it to, and it seems to be moving lower in the near term, and that's good news. That's helped the MPC itself to rethink where the risks lie to inflation. As you will have seen from in the last MPC statement, we saw that inflation risks look much more balanced, and that enabled the MPC to be a lot more confident about adjusting rates lower in the September meeting. Of course, the NPR tries to provide not just a short-term perspective on where we are now, but a much longer-term perspective on, you know, where inflation has been over the last couple of years, what are its drivers, and where we think it's going in future. The future is not, it's still cloudy, and we titled the NPR the clearing storm. So we think we're through the worst of it. But there are still, you know, some heavy seas here and there. We've seen countries having to reverse course occasionally on their policy rates. A couple of countries in Latin America have experienced that. So, you know, we're not really at a point now where we're home and dry and inflation is stable and very confidently stable at a much, much lower level. We've hit that lower level. We want to see it stay there.
We're not out of the woods yet. But Chris, what are some of those underlying structural challenges that still concern the central bank at this point? Understanding, of course, that a lot of the challenges that persist or challenges you can't do anything about, but you have to keep an eye on.
Well, right. So there are a range of global challenges, and we'll have to see how they play themselves out. There's obviously a lot of political and outright conflict around the world that generates risks to things like supply chains and oil prices and food prices, and we've seen a lot of volatility in those numbers in recent times. Domestically, obviously, low growth is not a great place to be. We would like to see the energy problem fully solved and be confident that load shedding is gone and that the energy supply will continue to rise. We've tended to take the view that energy constraints are bad for, obviously, for GDP, but it's also bad for inflation. So when our productivity in the economy is low, our inflation rate tends to go up, not down. And that causes, of course, problems for monetary policy. So, you know, there are a range of issues there. It's definitely the case that we've said this for a long time, that a much stronger growth rate in the domestic economy would be good for monetary policy generally and help us out quite a lot.
Chris, something else that's been said a lot and being said by the governor at the central bank is around future policy and around that long-term anchoring of inflation at a lower rate. I know it's preemptive to ask you to speak as an MPC member on meetings that have not yet taken place, but have the conversations now firmly shifted to say, we have inflation kind of under control. It's not where we want it to be, but maybe now we can start revisiting that conversation around long-term targeting at an even lower rate, because that serves us even better as an economy going forward.
So, there are two different and, you know, very separate processes. One is the process around monetary policy setting in the short term, and that's what the Monetary Policy Committee is about. We convene every other month with a lot of data and a lot of forecasting to look through what we think are the inflation risks and how they relate to the forecast. And that's predicated on what we've articulated for a number of years now, trying to get the inflation rate to 4.5% of headline inflation and stuck there and anchored there well. A separate process is a discussion about, how much of an outlier is South Africa relative to the rest of the world? And why do we tend to have higher inflation in South Africa compared to the rest of the world? And this is not just a comparison against advanced economies. It's also a comparison with other emerging market economies, most of whom have inflation targets. Most of their inflation targets sit at somewhere between 2% and 3%. Because we have a higher inflation rate, there are costs to this economy. And these are costs that play themselves out over quite long periods of time. The impact on the exchange rate, the impact on how much that exchange rate depreciates, it feeds through into inflation, and it feeds through into the level of the interest rate that prevails, again, over longer periods of time. Those are all negatives to the economy. They impede growth. So there needs to be, and there has been for quite some time, a kind of analytical question and process going on out there about saying, well, what would be a better inflation rate for South Africa, and how would you get to it? And that's something that we do a lot of work on. We've had many internal discussions about it. We've chatted to the Treasury about it here and there. It's a kind of an ongoing thing. It is the kind of conversation where it's important to get buy-in and get everybody around the table to understand that there are economic costs associated with the higher inflation rate that we have. Just to give you one very clear one, when your price level grows at a faster rate than that in the rest of the world, you lose competitiveness. And that means that our imports cost more and our exports aren't as competitive in foreign markets. When we compete with imports, we're not as competitive. So there really is a very direct cost associated, just that's just one of them, from having an inflation target and an inflation rate that sits well above that of the rest of the world. So, you know, that's the kind of flavor of the discussion we have and the kind of analytics we do. But it's a very different process from the MPC's one, which is much more focused on the short term.
Mm. Chris, when we look forward and we look out towards just making South Africa more competitively, or more competitive rather, there have been conversations around the fact that the South African Reserve Bank's mandate should be expanded as well. Now, the current mandate, obviously, as we know it, is currency protection and inflation management and inflation targeting. If we are to kind of extrapolate into an ideal future that has an expanded mandate on policy, obviously that means there are tools that the SARB would then need to add to its arsenal. Can we look to other central banks around the world and say perhaps there's tools we can learn from other central banks in the event that our mandate is expanded? Obviously, that can only be done via the right channels, and that's not what we're looking at. But are there lessons we can learn as a central bank to better ourselves even more?
Well, we learn a lot from other central banks all the time. You know, we watch what they do. We talk to them regularly about the things they do. But of course, different countries have different kinds of problems, different challenges. So you will remember back to the global financial crisis and its aftermath. You know, some central banks innovated by doing things like quantitative easing. It didn't apply to us, but it applied to them. So central banks are in a position where they need to try out new tools. The mandate is a different story. I mean, our mandate has two parts. One part is about financial stability and making sure our financial system is stable. We don't have big financial crises. And the other part, which is more involved with monetary policy, is maintaining the value of the currency in the interest of sustained and balanced growth. There are different ways of interpreting what sustained and balanced growth means, but on balance, it really refers to is keeping your inflation rate low so that the different parts of your economy are given the opportunity to grow. So it's very explicitly saying that low inflation will help to achieve a balanced growth rate. And I don't see any particular reason why one would want that to change. The inflation targeting framework is the way in which that mandate is implemented. And as you know, was set up in 2000 in consultation with the National Treasury at the time.
There you have it, folks. The South African Reserve Bank on their monetary policy review that they conduct on a regular basis and what their monetary policy stance is from a short-term, medium-term and a long-term perspective. Thank you so much, Dr. Luvalt. That's Dr. Chris Luvalt, who is the head of economic research at the South African Reserve Bank. He's also sitting as a member of the Monetary Policy Committee at the South African Reserve Bank.
Imagine if you could save time like you save money. A second here, a minute there. Type a little faster, walk a little faster, or you could stop scrolling on the internet. Just think of all the hours you'll save. Now, what if you could take all that time and invest it? Watch it grow. Until eventually, one day, you'd have so much time that you wouldn't know what to do with it all. But unfortunately, time doesn't work like that. It can't be stored or banked. And unlike money, you can't make it back. That's why after 50 years of investing, we've learned that time is the greatest gift of all. And the good news is, if you invest early, time gives you money. And then money gives you more time to do whatever you want to do, even if it is scrolling on the internet. Ellen Gray, long-term investing. Ellen Gray is an authorized FSP.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
The statistics are quite shocking as we reflect on World Food Day today. One of the stats suggests that 1 in 4 children's growth is stunned by the fact that they have food insecurity, and that is certainly something to be worried about. I'm joined on the line by the Chief Sustainability Officer at the ShopRite Group, that is Sanjeev Raghubir, to take a look at the latest initiative from the ShopRite Group around putting together a food index and a food security index and what we make of that. Good evening, Sanjeev. Thanks so much for taking the time. Tell us about this latest index and why ShopRite felt it necessary as the largest retailer in the country and on the continent to put this together.
Yeah, good evening, Jimmy. So the ShopRite Group commissioned the South African Food Security Index to get a better understanding of our levels of food security in the country. And as you indicated, we felt it was quite important as the largest food retailer in the country and certainly on the continent to get a deeper understanding for what the drivers of food security are. So we commissioned the University of Stellenbosch to complete this food security index. And what was different about this index this year was that it looks at the different dimensions of food security, being availability, access, utilization, and stability. So it brought together a whole lot of data and insights that we could look at to understand where the different focus areas should be to address food insecurity in South Africa.
Now, Sanjeev, we've come off of the worst levels of food insecurity in South Africa that we've seen, and I think we kind of peaked just around the pandemic, just perhaps before the pandemic, but we're not out of the woods yet, and food insecurity is still a serious concern, or food security rather is still a serious concern in the current day that we live in.
Indeed, Jimmy. It was quite surprising that if you look at the last 4 or 5 years from 2019, where the index scored at around 64.9, down to 2023, where the index scored 45.3. And you can see the downward trajectory towards zero, which implies a severe level of food insecurity. And one of the outcomes of that, as you indicated, is the levels of children stunting, of growth stunting among children, where it revealed, and we can see, that 1 in 4 children is actually growth stunted. And the implications of that are quite dire for the country, because it means our future generations, their growth and their ability to be economically active is diminished.
Sanjeev, you mentioned the 4 dimensions that the report covers, or the index covers. And I want to look at, obviously, the access element of it, because that's such a crucial aspect of it. I mean, we can look at all the other dimensions in greater detail at another time, but access is so important because in some cases, it's a household that has more than one child in it. Sometimes it's multiple households that don't have access to food. And that becomes almost critical to the rest of the index and the other dimensions. If they can't access the food, we can't even look at things like how they utilize it.
Absolutely. And it's an important dimension because it also reflects on affordability. So whether households have the ability to afford not just the quantities of food, but the right types of food in terms of the diversity of food, so that it can address issues around hunger, but also around growth. And what was quite surprising is the survey revealed the differences between male-headed and female-headed households. So we saw that in male-headed households, it had a higher level of food security, whereas in female-headed headed households, the levels of food insecurity were higher. And this really relates to, in many cases, the levels of unemployment amongst female-headed households compared to male-headed households. So quite surprising findings in that sense.
Sanjeev, where do we go to from here? Because obviously this is something that needs to be addressed. It's of critical importance that it's addressed. And ShopRite is in a unique position where you're able to influence how we tackle this, given your position within the economy and within the global landscape.
Yeah, that's right. So I think what we're calling for is really the prioritization of nutritional interventions for children, particularly in the first 1,000 years, first 1,000 days, so that they can have sufficient food, nutrition, at the right quantities and the right types to support their development. We also related the importance of zero-rated VAT on certain key food items, particularly those food items that are used by low-income households, food items that are important from a protein source perspective, items like canned fish, eggs, liver, chicken liver, etc. And the importance of supporting communities, rural communities, with food gardening, so ensuring that they have the capacity to grow their own food. So through this, the ShopRite group has implemented a number of programs, including supporting communities with community food gardens. The group supports more than 250 of these gardens, providing the right level of mentorship and training so that communities can grow their own food and have this level of diversity. But also importantly is having this footprint of stores, ShopRite, USave, Checkers, even OK franchise stores across the country, so that there is access to food at the right levels and at the right pricing as well.
It's World Food Day, and food security has never been more important than it is now. I think we'll leave the conversation there. Sanjeev, thanks so much for the time and for the insights and for putting the report together. We hope to see that this report yields some positivity and we can address the issue. That's Sanjeev Raghubir, who is the Chief Sustainability Officer at the ShopRite Group, on their inaugural Food Security Index report that they've put up online.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
Ready to take control of your financial future? Moneyversity Plus is your go-to streaming edutainment platform for all ages. With fun, engaging content and downloads for kids ages 6 to 17 and practical lessons for adults of all ages, Moneyversity Plus makes learning about money easy and exciting for everyone in the family. Plus, as you learn, you can earn Old Mutual Rewards points, a win for your wallet and a win for your future. Whether it's mastering money basics or planning your financial goals, Moneyversity has you covered. Start streaming today and join thousands of others at moneyversity.co.za. Your plus one for financial wisdom.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
It's once again time for our Warning Wednesdays. For those who don't know why we do this segment, it's because consumers out there don't seem to take things seriously until it's too late. And we try to prevent that by informing our consumers, informing our listeners around the importance of doing your homework. We have a couple of warnings to get through. We've got a couple of surprising announcements from the FSCA to look into. And when we have these conversations with the FSCA, we always make sure that we have the best on hand to have these discussions with them. Joined on the line by the Divisional Head of Enforcement at the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, Gerard van Dieffenter, to take a look at some enforcement matters and some warnings that we need to get out there. Good evening, Gerard. Always lovely to speak to you. Let's start with enforcement actions against those that were linked to some VBS matters.
Thank you, Jimmy. The feeling is mutual as always, and I really appreciate you getting these messages out. So yeah, we did make a media release to tell the public that we took action against Gundu Wealth Solutions and its key individual, Mr. Razvinani. And you're right, that is an outflow of the whole VBS investigation, much bigger investigation, not our investigation, but a much, much bigger investigation. You would have noted that we are really only involved in the fringes on the whole VBS because it was a bank issue more than anything else, and it was a prudential authority investigation. But where it became relevant for us, we did take up those issues to investigate, and Gundu Wealth is certainly one of those. We took the steps to take action against him after, of course, the whole process, big investigation, and then, of course, the whole enforcement process. So we imposed a penalty of 3 million rand on Mr. Razvinani, and we debarred him for 10 years. And that is basically for contraventions of our general code and quite a few of those contraventions. But what it really comes down to is the advice that he provided to two clients, the Community Schemes Ombud Services and the Polokwane Local Municipality. So they invested surplus funds deposits with VBS Bank, in our view, our findings is that that advice was totally inappropriate, amongst others, because it circumvented the Public Finance Management Act and the Municipal Finance Management Act. And those are quite strict rules, and they're there for a reason. But of course, big issue always for us, Jimmy, is did our financial services providers properly look at analyzing client risk profiles? So we're talking about suitability of these investments, and in our view, this was not the case here, hence the enforcement actions.
Speaking of suitability, Gerard, let's move to the other enforcement action that came out today. That was the suspension of the Bankso license, the Bankso FSP license. Now, in the past, we've seen a lot of comments in the media around the Bankso specific business, everything from deepfake conversations, inappropriate services that are being rendered. And it's quite interesting with this particular organization, because they also have been very public in being the sponsors of South Africa's national football team. And that is a very dangerous thing for an entity to claim to be regulated appropriately, but then to find themselves in this situation. Can you tell us why you chose to suspend that license?
Yes, of course. So I have to start off, Jimmy, by just saying that the investigation is not completed. So the statements I'm making are not final findings by the FECA. We will soon finalize our report, and then we will provide Bankso with the opportunity to properly reply. So we have to see it in that light. But in short, what we're talking about here is the whole investigation started as a result of a scam. I think that everybody is very well aware of by now, and that's the Immediate Matrix scam. And that was the typical AI and impersonation scams. The deep fake videos of Elon Musk and Rupert and Nikki Oppenheimer and so forth. And then, of course, something that you and I know very well and spoken about a lot before, completely unrealistic returns. So it was clear that it was a scam. And then also they gave out that they had some link to Bankso, which is a regulated entity. So that lends a lot of legitimacy to the whole thing. But as the investigation progressed, there were certain things that raised major concerns with the FECA. So we refocused our investigation to include Bankso in it. And we have now reached the point where we see a definite link between Bankso and Immediate Matrix. And it may be that they can explain it. But it is a concern. It's also a concern that Bankso is the big beneficiary of the scam. In other words, when people went onto the Immediate Matrix fraudulent website, they were directed to Bankso. So there's a lot of technicalities around that we will properly address, and I'm sure they will properly address with us. But needless to say, that is an issue. Some of the other issues that's also of concern to us is that they seem to have employed very aggressive sales techniques that definitely does not amount to good advice to clients. And the other thing that we've seen before is the client loses money, he's then aggressively encouraged to commit more money. And that's not a healthy thing. And then lastly, you know, back to the risk issue, back to the suitability of the product issues. So this is at best, this is a contract for difference, a derivative instrument, high risk, suitable for a very small part of the community. And we are not convinced that there were proper risk analysis and proper advice based on this risk analysis. So we thought at this stage, although we haven't made final findings, and although they haven't had an opportunity to reply, it would be the responsible thing to do to provisionally withdraw the license, finalize the investigation, and then take the matter further. Yeah, that's where we are with it. You would probably know that in this process, we also collaborated with the FIC, the Financial Intelligence Center. They froze some funds in the accounts. I think we're looking at about 92 million that was frozen. And we also collaborated with the Asset Forfeiture Unit, who obtained a preservation order with reference to those funds. So the first step is to safeguard the assets, and then it gives us a breather to complete the investigation and to deal with the case properly.
The matter is still ongoing, and that's why the license has been provisionally withdrawn at this stage. We will keep an eye on this and obviously update our listeners around this. Mkharat, I want to move on to the decision to set aside a previous enforcement action that went through in March of this year. There was a 216 million rand fine that was levied against a gentleman named Konrad Buerta, who was involved with the coin-based innovation global businesses. That decision to have that fine set aside. Take me through that and why that was made by the FSCA.
Yes, Jimmy, a bit of a painful one, but you can't always have exactly what you want. So, but let me explain. So every decision we make, every administrative action we take for proper order, and given the fact that we live in a country with a proper constitution, there must be protection for the public. So every decision we take, if it's an administrative decision, the other side, the respondent, has an automatic right of reconsideration to the Financial Sector Tribunal, an independent body from us headed up by a judge of the High Court, and from there onwards on review as well. So some respondents do exercise this right, and that is fine. So in the present case, what happened, yes, we were taken on reconsideration.
We're going to have to leave that conversation there owing to time, unfortunately. But thank you so much to Gerard van der Winter for the insights. We're going to put up the rest of that conversation online. We're going to finish that conversation for sure, because there are other enforcement actions within there. But we do have limited time on the show, unfortunately.
You are listening to Jimmy Muyaha on SAFM.
This segment is brought to you by Alan Gray, 50 years of long-term investing. Alan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. We spoke about this earlier on at the start of the show with Nick Kunz around the fact that global markets are going to be influenced by some of the political matters that are coming out later on in this year. We've had some elections throughout the year, and we will continue to wrap up these elections as we go into the US election a couple of weeks away. And to look at that particular election and other political matters that might be affecting markets, I'm joined on the line by Jiten Pillay, who is the portfolio manager at Alan Gray. Good evening, Jiten. Thanks so much for taking the time. Undoubtedly, the focus at the moment is US elections and market volatility and sentiment, and everything around where we are in this last quarter of the year is centered around whether or not we're going to see Donald J. Trump return to the White House.
Yeah, the U.S. is an interesting point in time. You know, politics is certainly a part of it, but I think, you know, for me the kind of bigger kind of overarching issues is just the economic backdrop. And you know, I think as much as either presidential candidate would like to take credit for the good things that happen and maybe blame the other person for the bad things that happen, you know, I would argue they probably have very little control of it. I think, you know, there's some bigger forces at play that I think is actually causing the volatility that you've seen. You know, I think, you know, when you're going through a period of heightened uncertainty and low visibility that we currently have, you know, people are looking for any kind of data point to either confirm or reject the thesis that they've got going in. So I think part of the reason you've seen the volatility is because, you know, when some macroeconomic data point comes out, you know, people tend to overreact, but either good or bad, depending on the signal that it's sending.
Jiten, a gentleman by the name of Benjamin Graham once said that the stock market is a voting machine over the short term. Now, we're heading into the elections. The elections are just weeks away. What's playing out in the market at the moment? And is that the case? Are we seeing that the markets are representative of what the voting might turn out to be?
Yeah, you know, when you talk about a voting machine, you know, I think the stock market for all of its, you know, sophisticated investors that kind of try to assess it, it's still ultimately one of the biggest gauges of sentiment. You know, things move wildly based on what's popular. You know, despite, you know, investing meant to kind of be a skill that kind of tries to remove emotion from it. So, you know, I think the current vote is one of positivity. You know, if you look at what we can look at what's priced into markets, you know, roughly you know, the market has continued U.S. interest rate cuts. It has inflation trending back down to the stable 2% that the U.S. enjoyed, you know, for the 20 years to 2021. You know, all of these things are good. You know, people are pricing in good news. And so to my mind, that's the current vote, if you will. I think what has me a little bit cautious here is, you know, expectations are somewhat high, and I worry that outcomes could be slightly worse than people expect. And, you know, that ultimately is the perfect setup for poor stock return going forward. So to my mind, you know, this is an environment, I think, to be very careful and ultimately to manage risk, I think, first and foremost.
Jiten, you mentioned good news being priced in, but also that outcomes need to be certain. And I want to look to our own local market as an example. We went through the speculation, we came out the other side, the outcome was more positive than what markets would have been pricing in, and we saw a very, very clear shift in market sentiment around how the markets viewed South Africa. What are some of those lessons that came out of that particular scenario, and how did that benefit our local companies?
Yeah, no, exactly right. You know, you've seen a big what we would call re-rating or an increase in the multiple that is applied to companies that predominantly face the South African economy, you know, post the election of the government of national unity. So, you know, the banks are somewhere up between 20% and 30%, apparel retailers a little bit even stronger than that. You know, what we would call SA Inc. companies have rallied quite significantly. And you know, I think somewhat rightly so. You know, the GNU definitely removed some of the left tail negative risk that I think surrounded South Africa before the election, and definitely increases the possibility of a favorable outcome down the road. I think the thing again that we're worried about is the fundamentals running. Sorry, the share prices running slightly ahead of the fundamentals, because you know the rally that we've seen thus far has. You know, it's mostly been on sentiment and on hope. Yes, there's some short-term factors that we think could help company earnings. You know, we've got things like lower oil prices, interest rate cuts, two-pot retirement reform. You know, all of those things put money into the hands of consumers today. The longer-term outlook, I think, is something that we're more worried about. Given that some of the structural factors that caused our economy to stagnate for a long time, you know, they haven't as yet been rectified.
Jiten, one of those structural factors was Eskom and the load shedding. We've just crossed that 200-day mark. We don't say it too many times, otherwise it shows up like Beetlejuice. But what do we do now with the other factors? What are those other risk factors? How do we tackle them? And how do we prioritize them? Because I think looking at some of the factors, you might say, oh, this is not important. But as a structural factor, it could be more important than something else.
Yeah, no, exactly right. You know, I would look at these things as enablers of growth. So, you know, looking at Eskom first, you're right. You know, we've passed the 200 days of no load shedding. You know, I wouldn't say we're completely out of the woods yet. If you look at Eskom's improved performance, I think it's welcome. But a lot of the structural challenges that it faced, you know, a year ago, they haven't gone away. You know, we still have a fairly aging coal fleet that's generating most of our power. You know, we need to find structural workarounds around that. Some of the other issues, well publicized, the issues at the ports, issues with railage, Transnet, I think, has certainly arrested the rapid decline, but you know there hasn't been a meaningful improvement as yet in operating performance. Kind of the other infrastructure issues that we're looking at quite carefully actually go down to the water boards and to local government. You know, when we talk to companies that we invest in on behalf of our clients, actually the things they're worried about now are provision of water into their factories to manufacture stuff. And, you know, stable electricity grids to get the electricity into their factories, which, again, isn't a load shedding problem. It's actually a local municipality that hasn't maintained the infrastructure. So, you know, they gained these key issues that impeded growth that I think we still need to see meaning reform on before I think we get a bit more excited.
As a fund manager, Jiten, are you looking at Rand hedges. I mean, you touched on SA Inc. There's a bit of optimism around that. In times of difficulty, we kind of look at Rand hedge markets or Rand hedge stocks and kind of protect valuations and things. Are we a little more relaxed as South African investors or as fund managers or just as an environment around the picture that is South Africa and saying the risk to South Africa seems to be coming down, or at least it's not as high as where it was?
Yeah, look, I think objectively the political risk has certainly come down somewhat. Some of the other fundamental challenges that I talked about earlier, you know, they, I think we still have to see tangible markers that those things are resolving themselves. So to the extent that local company valuations have run fairly hard, we've used that opportunity to rotate into some of the Rand hedges that haven't performed as strongly. Again, coming back to what I said earlier, you know, the adage of stock prices getting ahead of fundamentals, I think, don't get me wrong, we're South Africans, we want it to go well, but until there's tangible evidence that that's actually happening to SA company earnings, which, you know, by and large haven't been able to grow above inflation for the better part of a decade, you know, until that picture starts to meaningfully turn, or at least we see evidence thereof, you know, we can buy some great companies, most of their earnings outside of South Africa that just happen to be listed here by some, you know, consequence of history. So companies like British American Tobacco, AB InBev, you know, fairly defensive economics, Rand hedges, and companies that we think individually are cheap.
Jiten, before I let you go, in a globally linked world like the one that we live in, is there an outcome from the US election that bodes better for the catalyst that we need for South African markets, whether it's the Democratic outcome or the Republican outcome? I don't need you to choose one, but is there one where we come out a little better than where we are?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'm not sure. And I'm not sure because, you know, I'm certainly not an expert here, but if you look at, you know, either candidate's policies, you know, I'm somewhat worried either way. Mm. You know, if you look at Trump, for example, you know, he's famously the president of tariffs. And if you think about what does that mean for inflation, you know, if all else equal, the cost of goods are going up, you know, that gets passed on to consumers, and that puts the price of things up. You know, have you really fixed the inflation problem? He's also the president of cutting taxes. So what does that mean for the kind of US's fiscal situation? Likewise, on the other side of the aisle, you know, you have a candidate that actually just wants to probably will keep spending, which also does nothing to help the fiscal problem. So, you know, either way, I think we're somewhat worried about the state of the US's finances. If we bring it back to South Africa, you know, all else equal, you would think with, you know, South Africa probably aligning itself with the East rather than the West, you know, perhaps a Trump presidency is slightly worse for us, but, you know, all else equal, I would say, for in terms of the impact on global markets and global economics, I'm not picking a big differentiation between the two.
Let's not pick a side. Let's focus on ourselves, do what's right for South Africa, and we'll see the rest later. Thank you so much, Jiten. Jiten Pillay, Portfolio Manager at Allan Gray, on the political impact on markets. This segment was brought to you by Allan Gray, 50 years of long-term investing. Allan Gray is an authorized financial services provider. It has already gone 7 o'clock. It's approaching 7:01. Greg Host is standing by with the latest round of evening news, followed by Michael Abramson and the Top Sport team from my side. Good night.